Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I am your host, Preston Schlankhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center deep within the Civil Defense Radio bunker. We hope your Christmas and New Year's was joyous and safe. Ours was filled with family and the energy of grandkids enjoying the season. Our guest and the subject of our discussion this episode is an update to some of the information we have shared previously about the health situation of our country and the world, and what we may want to do to stay healthy going forward. So it is my pleasure to welcome a great patriot and friend, Dr. Tal Braun. Doc, welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
Thank you, Preston, and thank you, all of your listeners. It's an honor to chat to you as always. And today, I appreciate that you're letting a wider audience hear some of our calls and our thoughts.
Yes. Can you give us a brief bio so that the people know who you are and what your credentials are?
Sure, sir. I think what's also important with my bio is I want to highlight what I've been doing over the last almost a decade and how that relates to a pandemic. I think what confuses people with the information that I've been unpacking and helping people with is that it crosses over into so many other disciplines. The central thread of my work over the last decade has been in behavioral science, and specifically peak performance and critical thinking, problem solving. Credential-wise, I am formally trained previously as a clinical psychologist. I moved from South Africa to the States and took up a role in the sort of motivational wellness and integrative health space. Found that it was fulfilling for me, but something was missing the mark post 9/11. I really wanted to be much more involved in the core of the work that I believe in, and started working towards using my background both in the medical world and in clinical psychology, and then took a deep dive into violence prevention, threat management, and how it relates to counterterrorism, emergency management. I've been teaching those subjects for the last few years, and my predominant role was sort of setting us up to do what other people would call expect the unexpected. I don't use that phrase. I've been using the phrase widen your possibility. And the bulk of my work has been on the conference circuit in emergency management, law enforcement, and public health as the integrator that helps bridge knowledge between those disciplines as it relates to the subject of mass killing.
Wow. And that's a very important area of focus too. And you've helped not only military, but DHS and other departments and organizations.
Yes, sir. So for me, the audiences have always got people from the private sector. I work a lot with security professionals. When it comes to law enforcement, the bulk of my work has been with counterterrorism, including bioterrorism folk and cyber folk and critical infrastructure and military. And I think what's always really rewarding for me is that because these are bulk audiences in conferences, I essentially can say that I've taught everybody from largest organizations, some of the massive companies that have been clients, as well as when I've got a big audience in front of me at a conference, I have people from all of our military branches represented, and everything from HHS and DOJ and FBI and CIA. And I've really felt honored to play a vital role in the safety of our nation and world over the last few years in increasingly bigger roles. Take us a little bit into our discussion today in that I have a subject that I've been talking about lately is you can have great individuals, but if an organization is corrupt, or if there has been some form of capture, regulatory capture within an organization, you lose the best people, even if they're still engaged, even if they're highly motivated, even if they're still on the payroll. If the organization itself has, if there's a capture of that organization, you're going to lose the benefit of good folks.
What do you mean by capture?
Well, our agencies, I'm going to speak specifically, even though I have a global audience I speak to, really wanting to reduce the suffering and violence in the world. But my work is here in the States and those organizations, and sort of the food chain of the States is the thing I'm most comfortable with in my terrain. So I'm going to stick to that, but of course it crosses over into other terrains. What I mean by capture is that our regulatory bodies in this country were set up to be an oversight. They were never set up to be enforcement. They were never set up to take control. They were never set up to give directives. The CDC, for example, was set up as an information agency. It was not something that people were supposed to be listening to beyond, okay, that's useful information. Our government, on the other hand, is a representation of us, the people. And us, the people, instruct our government what it is that we want and our ideals. The opposite has occurred, where now the regulatory bodies are controlling our government. And those regulatory bodies have been essentially bought over a period of time. People that would have just played the role of nudging from the side, sort of giving helpful hints, giving crucial information, and then leaving it up for leadership to decide. We've got it upside down right now. We've got small bodies of regulators controlling the larger entity. And that's been done through a series of mechanisms, including lobbyists, making sure that certain people are elected, making sure that those elected officials then employ people to carry out an agenda. We really can't look at any agency in the country right now and know that they are serving the people. They serve an agenda, and part of how we unpack this is to be really looking constantly at agenda. We need to stop talking about people. We need to stop talking about what the agency is or isn't, and we should have a look if the agenda relates to the will of the people.
I agree completely, and that flows into some of the things that we've talked about over the months that we've been talking. A lot of people don't like politics. They don't, once they hear the injection of politics into a discussion, they tune out or they walk away. I think is what those who have captured our agencies within the government, and that's not just at the federal level, it goes all the way down to the local school board level, as we've noticed in Loudoun County, Virginia. The school board is captured. People, they walk away from that because they don't want that negativity infecting their mind. But it's something that we must be aware of, because if you know your enemy, then you know yourself, or something like that. If you know yourself, then you know your enemy. You have to know who they are, what they're doing, their strategies, and what we as the people can do to counteract that strategy that they're using and either remain free or secure the freedoms that we have lost. Is that
I agree completely, and yeah, I agree completely. And there's a couple of things there that that I think one aspect is I think there was a question, or at least something that piqued my interest in saying is that there's got a benefit in coming from a different country. So I wasn't raised within a two-party system. I wasn't raised with the idea of who a Democrat was or Republican was. I don't have some of these phrases, these sort of knee-jerk phrases that people use. When that happens and things become binary and people are made to choose between two opposing views, it takes away from the world that we really live in, which is a complete continuum of views, a multiple perspective. I think that the founding fathers realized that, and our mechanisms are supposed to stop this sort of yes-no binary Democrat-Republican thinking. And I think that's partly why people walk away from it. People will walk away from any situation that they don't feel like they can find a point of leverage, that they don't feel like they could influence in any way. And for good reason, you walk away from things that are going to waste your time. And so I think that there are ways to understand this and ways to really break it apart that we can look at other organizations have done. For example, sort of the movement that was trying to protect farmers throughout our nation. They worked on a solid message of supporting local, making sure that even if it's a few items that you bought, that you went to that farmer's market, that you met your farmers, that you went down the street, that the idea of having Bill Gates capture all of our, I think he owns 26% of our land here in the U.S. Most of that is farmland. And essentially all the systems in our state, in the states right now, are running through a community-like software system where you can't unpack your local farmer's milk. It just gets all put together with other farmer's milk. And in that way, it's unified and owned and controlled. So I think local, when you mentioned school boards, I think that if we really want to move away from this, and we're from this idea that we can't do anything, we need to find our influence within smaller circles, using that security metaphor of concentric circles, and realize that you don't necessarily start at the outer layer of security if you want to penetrate it. If you can penetrate it from smaller areas of your influence first, you'll have much more benefit. And that way, I think people will be re-engaged. There's another point I want to make about politics, which I found working with medical folks in the last 2 years. I get ghosted pretty quickly, or they cut me off, or they don't want to hear crucial points of information of understanding agenda. And this is where I shift gears and where I think people have power. We talk about concepts like a pandemic or a virus and people's decisions, and there's no accountability when those are on such a large scale that there isn't a human factor, there isn't a person that can be blamed, held accountable, go to prison, fined, give back money. When you have an issue with your bank, you're not taking on your entire banking structure. If there's a mistake in your account, you're speaking to somebody in front of you, and the teller or the business person in front of you is in a much better position to help you fix the problem. And it's the same here. I think that it's important to start naming names, and I think it's important to hold people accountable. And I'll give you one version of this in terms of violation of our First Amendment rights. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important for all of our Second Amendment folk that are listening. There's a good reason that it's the Second Amendment and not the first to bear arms. Your primary structure that allows you to bear arms is your voice, being able to be heard, being able to have you and your neighbors and your community and your nation's viewpoints heard loudly so that you can carry out your other God-given rights. Once you lose that power, the ability for a government to censor you, your Second Amendment rights aren't going to be that worthwhile. You're going to be tread on, and you're going to be tread on in ways that you don't even know that you're being tread on because you're being censored. And I'll give you a perfect example.
Especially in this modern world.
Absolutely, where it's all controllable, and a lot of it is digital, and a lot of it is done from behind the scenes. And here's the most powerful example I can give of that. People that are searching for crucial information right now to make decisions, and some people have now been forced to make that decision already around these vaccines. You're not going to find the other side to the story. You're just not going to find it. You're going to have to dig really hard, and people don't have the time, and they don't necessarily even know the best places to go looking for alternative information to make an informed decision. You never make a decision. It wouldn't be called a decision if you only had one choice. When people go looking for that and they don't find it, there's one person in this nation to blame. His name is Adam Schiff. Congressman Adam Schiff in 2019, get the dates on this. We're talking pre-pandemic. We're talking about January of 2019. Congressman Adam Schiff decided he was going to try and push through a bill that said that all anti-vaccine, and let's look at the date again. We're not talking about COVID vaccines yet. We're talking about all vaccine information needs to be scrubbed. And he tried to push that through as a bill. Obviously, in a world that we were living in pre-pandemic, that was never going to fly. So what it was really about is pushing through an agenda, finding the correct words to have meetings where he brought the technology partners into this conversation. And basically, the technology partners, in serving their interests of profit, said, yes, what we'll do is from this point on, we will reconfigure our algorithms and we will scrub the internet and bookstores and digital websites and videos and everything that somebody can use to find a multiple perspective. From this point on, in January 2019, we will start the great bleaching of any other information, so that when someone goes into their digital library, their real world library, or their bookstore, or onto YouTube, you will not find the competing information. Well, that is a complete violation of not only human rights, but our constitution. There is a person who violated our constitution. His name is Adam Schiff, and he needs to be held accountable for robbing a mother's ability to make a safe decision for her offspring. Now, why am I using the word mother rather than father? Well, this is where I look at gender differences. A father is a great protector, but a father is built to be out in the wild, mostly hunting, and coming back and bringing food sources and protecting the loved ones from much more strategic, sort of tribal, bigger picture attack. It was always the woman who were left in a village, and the older men left in a village, that would protect from a sudden impulsive or non-strategic type attack. And you can see that in mama bears. And you can see that there's a difference between messing with a mama bear who's got a cub with her versus a female bear that's just out there without offspring. But the reason that our mothers aren't in the street like they are in other countries, and the reason that moms are making awful decisions to get their kids' innate immune system destroyed for profit, is that they do not know that there's another side to this. And there is a person who needs to be held accountable. His name is Adam Schiff. When a mother is standing in a line this week with her five-year-old kid destroying their innate immune system, that person needs to be held accountable. Not the mom, not the child, not the medical director, because all of those people have had their First Amendment rights tread on by one single human being, and he has a name.
You know, that's terrible. My wife, last week, she went to a clinic. She saw a mom holding her child down to get a shot. She said it was distressing, very distressing, because she wanted to say something, but it wasn't her right to say anything, because that was that mother's child. So it's sad how many people are brainwashed with the psychological operation that's been going on since, I guess, 2019. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. January of 2019 was the beginning of this purge of alternate thought and voice. I remember it happening later on in 2020, but I didn't know it was that early. But I know one thing: I've been shut down five or six times.
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody who's trying to bring out information that is not consistent with a current very tight narrative that's very purposeful to do it that way, anybody is purposefully shut down. And you can see that there was a rollout. People forget that documents exist. I, as somebody that's been in the training to manage critical events, there's an entire world of bioterrorism training. And I've sat through those presentations, and I've always found them laughable. I looked at people up on a stage somewhere talking about a smallpox epidemic or anthrax, and I looked at the budgets that they had and the interest they had from people, and even the logistics. I mean, just think about a wartime situation. By the time somebody's hit with nerve gas, they don't have time for the PPE that's required.
No.
It makes no sense, right? If you think back, and I know we've probably got a lot of people that will listen to this that understand operations and tactical positions. If you think about sort of where this model falls flat, this model also falls flat in the way that we've told the public to defend themselves against an active attacker. We used a run, hide, fight model that was taught to people in a way that was never said, you might need to fight first and then run. You might need to hide only for a second behind something that's going to give you cover, and then you're going to run again, and you're going to do that until you get out of the building. Mm-hmm. A model was taught that got people killed.
Yeah.
And I watched my career change over the last few years because it got more and more difficult for me to find spaces to tell the truth. And one of the final straws for me was at the beginning of this pandemic, I was supposed to go back and do something for the CMS folks, the Medicare folks.
Right.
And I flat out refused. I sent out my presentation. It's one of my only clients that always demanded that I send out a presentation for them to look at, censor, delete first. And they, I've got a fool me once policy. And uh-huh. So when I presented for CMS a couple of years ago and saw that they needed my information diluted to the point that it was useless, when they tried that again the second time around, I said, oh, I decline. I'm not interested. We're in the midst of a pandemic and the non-truth is killing people. I'm not adding to that.
Yes.
And it's become more and more difficult for anybody who wants to bring people the actual truth on a subject, the survivability of a subject. And that, to me, is another sign of how far we are on this clock. I've been calling it the 11:57. We're on a 12 o'clock clock, and we are getting so close. I want to say this point before we run out of time. I think the biggest issue with our Second Amendment folks right now is that the tunnel vision, the idea of shots fired, the idea of we all know that this is not a gun issue. We all know that it's not about a choice of weapon, that it's an ability to defend yourself, the human right to preserve yours and your loved one and anyone else's life that you want to preserve. It's about that. But we got tricked by hearing about gun control as part of their winning strategy, because everybody is waiting for a shot to be fired. But I'm going to tell you how you go and find people right now that are being attacked with a far more lethal weapon than an AR-15. Go down the street today to any doctor's office, mm-hmm. pharmacy, clinic, a hospital, anywhere that they are giving people a shot of venom, right? Because that's what these COVID vaccines are. This is a gene therapy venom treatment. If it's an mRNA, and if it's not mRNA, then it's a shot of venom without the ability to get into your genetic. But either way, you can go and see a mass casualty attack happening in real time today at any of those locations. Guess what? You're not going to hear a single bang, not one. But look at the choice of word. It's called the shot.
Yeah, and there's so much money behind this. The question is, well, how come the doctors don't stand up against this? Well, it's because their livelihood is at stake. They don't want to go against the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, because their bank is big. They want those paychecks from the government. If the only place you'll find the truth is a doctor who doesn't do Medicare, Medicaid services, doesn't get paid by that, and then he's free to do what he wants, and he will say the truth 9 out of 10 times. But CMS controls the purse strings to the Medicare, Medicaid dollars that goes to these major hospitals and conglomerates that are medical based. And so we're not getting the truth. We're not getting real medicine. We're not getting a personalized treatment. It's all one type of treatment. You get the shot and you live with it if you do. There's so many incidents of people dying shortly after or being seriously injured from these shots. And the shot that's given right now is not, and back me up on this, is not the approved vaccine. It is still the emergency use vaccine that's not really a vaccine. It's still an experimental drug because it has not gone through the clinical testing that needs to be because it was rushed through.
I will back you up on it, but I'm going to do more than just back you up on it. I'm going to make sure that something that we can correct, just like correcting the sight on a rifle, is we need to be aware of distraction techniques. So we need to, the CIA ops and propaganda and psychological methods that are being used are the best in the world, and these have been honed throughout from you know, longer than the Cold War. Mm-hmm. These are, you're dealing with some ancient principles here of warfare, and you're now bringing in the best, and then you're getting both leaders to conspire on this. And let's look at this as a magician's trick, right? So we could have a whole discussion. We could go down a whole discussion around whether these are approved, non-approved, emergency use. I couldn't care. I couldn't care what you want to call it. I couldn't care if it's approved tomorrow. There's a couple of things we need to think about. Approved by who? The same people that are giving approval have an agenda.
Yes.
They're not an unbiased, protective, safety-related organization anymore and haven't been for years. The fact that we're using remdesivir to kill people. Remdesivir is our version of Zyklon B. People are for $40,000, right, which is our seniors mostly, were sent into hospitals, and ventilators can keep somebody alive for months, maybe even years. You got a human corpse breathing. That's too slow. You need to move that body. That's called remdesivir, right? So we are literally bringing in Zyklon B into the hospitals and then moving out those bodies. Well, who approved the remdesivir? The FDA, right? So approved by who? I couldn't care. I'm not going to touch anything or take their word about any product. I haven't for years, and I'm certainly not going to until we clean out and literally rebuild these organizations with our own people. And when I say our own people, right, that is the will of the people. For me, this is not about nationalities. This is not about genders. This is about the will of regular common folk with common sense. And we need to look at the fact that if you're pushing a product that has a lethal toxicity rating and you're giving that to people that are almost dead, you're killing them. And Canada's doing the same thing with their choice, and the UK is doing the same choice. And they stockpiled and started using drugs that are used for euthanasia. Right, so we need to look at approved by who. I couldn't care what they approved. Right, the second part about that approval process is understanding that you are being tricked by getting into discussion about whether it's approved or not, whether there's profit involved, who made it, how could they made it so fast, whether it's safe, whether it's effective. Let's not discuss that at all. Let's discuss venom. Let's discuss that I cannot get traction. It's been a year and a half after discovering that scientists around the world had discovered venom on the spike protein of this particular SARS-CoV-2 coronavirus. Venom. And let's be specific. I'm using the word venom. I'm not using the word toxin. I'm not using the word poison. I'm going to use it. Of course, it is a toxin. And of course, it is a venom. It is a poison. But I'm going to use the word venom because that's what it is. There is what's called a homolog, which is ultimately meaning it's synthetic. It's a copy of natural two venoms on the original SARS-CoV-2 spike protein. Mm. And that is the venom of cobra And that is the venom of a snake called the krait, both K-R-A-I-T. And both of those are two highly venomous, lethal bites. So you have a snake bite. COVID is an envenomation. And you will find molecularly that's what it is, and you'll find biologically that's what it is, and you'll find the treatments that are needed are the treatments that are needed for a snake bite or scorpion or anything else that has that kind of redox oxidative reactions that take place from venom. And so the distraction technique here has been that they are telling us, just like you do with cattle that need to be vaccinated, just like you need to do with cattle that are going to the slaughterhouse, they telling us what to discuss and debate and think about. It's up to us to have a look at the problem and we define the conversation. My conversation right now, and Preston, unfortunately on my side, I have to wrap up, but I'm going to do a couple of things. One, you have me back. I'm always prepared to tell more and unpack more. The other side to this is that I'm going to leave people thinking about some new questions to ask. How long is Fauci's prison sentence? What is the appropriate sentence or death penalty for mass murder? That's the conversation I want to have.
Yes, me too.
Then I want to ask, who are co-conspirators? I want to know who is paying a person like Dr. Fauci, because he's certainly not the mastermind. He has the manipulative skills, but not the intelligence to run an operation like this. He's a gatekeeper. So I want to know who his wardens are. I want to know who his bosses are. I want to know the mob and the organized crime cartel that is running this. And then I want to know what their appropriate sentences look like and whether the death penalty for mass murder and genocide is appropriate.
Oh, definitely.
I want to know what reparations look like. I want to look at this no differently than seizure of property and finances of a drug cartel. This
exactly.
needs to come back to the people, right? I want to know people like CNN's CEO of the year. The Pfizer CEO is CNN's CEO of the year, right? Okay, well, the prize was for running an organized genocide. Well, then he won. He won. He is the best at genocide that we've had so far on this planet. So what is the appropriate sentence for a human being like that? We need to shift the conversation. We need to stop thinking about how we end mandates and start talking about who's accountable for these mandates. If we keep talking about whether they should or shouldn't exist and how we fight them, we'll stay in that battle forever. Neutralize the threat. End it. The word is no. And then you say, okay, I'm saying no. What are the consequences? We need our National Guard, right, and our law enforcement to say no. That's what we need. That's what this country needs. This is not going to be fought like any other place in the world. We are not going to get ourselves into a situation where the Australian civilians are having to fight their own law enforcement. We don't need that here. That would be too bloody. I've seen that before.
Yeah.
I come from that. That was apartheid. We are not turning our civilians against our military and our law enforcement and our security personnel. We are not doing it. These are our brothers. These are our sisters. That's somebody's uncle. That's somebody's aunt. That's someone's cousin. We are not being told that the enforcers are our enemy. And that those enforcers should never see the innocent, right, as their enemy.
Right.
That is not their role, and we need to turn to the most important document that will save us, called the Constitution. And we cannot allow our enforcers and our protectors and our professional protectors and our security personnel to turn against their neighbors. And I can tell you how that's going to happen. That's going to happen by not what they've done so far, by forcing people out. The military did a purge of anyone that they thought would push back. They're out already.
Right.
We just lost 100 Marines. Not in a war. We lost them because they said no, right? I'm planning to hire all 100 of them, right? We need to start protecting those that say no and giving consequences for those that are going along with it.
Right.
We need to reverse our actions. The other thing that we need to be able to do is that it starts with the word no. And so when our National Guard says, you have fired thousands of healthcare workers across the country during a pandemic when you need them the most because they do not want venom in their body, I will not serve in a position in a hospital. I will not take away an American citizen's right to earn a living and nationalize our hospitals. You didn't need us because there was a shortage. You created the shortage, and now I'm starving out some family somewhere. I'm not going to do it. I do not have to follow those kind of orders. And the Constitution and our military constitution protects against those rights. We do not do that unless we are working with insurgents or enemy combatants. You know we cannot be doing this to innocent human beings.
Right.
So we need to say no. That National Guard needs to step out of those hospitals today, because they're planning to do that anyway. They're going to make these hospitals rely on the National Guard, and then they're going to pull them out to make sure that the healthcare system collapses to fully nationalize our hospitals.
Exactly. That's their goal. That's what the Marxists are doing. These globalists, they're Marxists, and that's their goal, to nationalize everything. And this whole pandemic is a plandemic to do that. These people need to be rounded up, taken to Gitmo, tried, and those who have severe sentences, they will never leave that island.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you something that that I want to end with an optimistic tone to this. When we talked about people looking for leverage, unlike international terrorism and unlike ideological terrorism, where you potentially have millions of people that could fall into a category where their belief systems are so much against yours that you would have a problem with them. That's not our situation here. So when you talk about an island, and when you talk about Guantanamo, that's doable, because when this comes down and when this is finally ended, you're going to be very surprised about how few people are actually involved.
Yeah.
So this is very easy to prosecute. This is, and it's not going to be prosecuted from our DOJ. They do not have the power anymore. They're another three-letter agency that has been captured. And so the optimistic tone is that people need to remember that it only takes a handful of cowboys to control a giant thousand head herd.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only a few cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing here. There's only a handful of people that need to be stopped and held accountable. And it starts with a different set of questions. I'm going to do something on my end that's both self-serving in terms of me wanting to help people and keep up good information. I'm going to do two things here. One, I'm going to end by saying that the next time that I'm able to talk to people, I want to spend time on the actual physical solutions, the biological solutions to cope with an attack of venom, both from vaccines and from the natural virus. It's actually pretty easy. It's just like a very simple crude bomb. Once you understand what you're looking at, it becomes really easy to defuse. And I want to help those that have been forced to be vaccinated. No judgment. I understand how many people, like that child, okay, have been held down. You're not going to see a 50-year-old man who's a security professional. You're not going to see them crying like a baby and being held down in public, but they're doing it at home.
Yeah.
Because their HR or their CEO forced them. So
yeah.
we know that there's plenty of people that have been injured that want to start the recovery process, and I want to help with that. The second part is, we have been, just like you and many others, I'm being censored, and so I want people to be able to go to Dr. Tal Braun. That's Dr. Dr. So that's Delta Romeo Tango Alpha Uniform Bravo Romeo Alpha Uniform November Dot Charlie Oscar Mike. And go over there, subscribe, because all of us, as part of this great exodus, all of us need to start leaving these social media platforms. We don't need them. In a digital world, the way to secure your future is to go analog. And so we have systems in place. It's called community, and it's called people around you. And Paul Revere was the first person in this country that got a great reputation for knowing how to use analog communication. I tell you, you tell someone else. We certainly don't need Mark Zuckerberg's permission. And with that, I'm out.
Well, we're going to have all your information in the show notes. So civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us, just like with this COVID crap. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. There's power in numbers, people. If we organize locally, we have power. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. And be sure to check out our social media sites at Facebook, Telegram, and MeWe. And I have one on YouTube that I've let fall derelict for quite a while, but hopefully we'll start getting some things there soon. But most of the items we post are important information for you about the threats we see to our safety and security as a nation. And yes, I post stuff about this Charlie 19. This is a huge threat to us and what these people are doing. I even post some things that are considered political, because you have to know who's doing what and what's going on, because these people, you know, they're going to use politics against us. So I wish to thank our guest, Doc Braun, again for being with us, and you, our American and international friends who listen to us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week, so please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.